It's time once again for another episode of All That's Jazz, the podcast that explores everything in the world of jazz. And here now is your host, Alan Scott.
My guest today is Grace Kelly. Yes, stop staring at your device, you heard me correctly. She is, however, not the actress princess, but instead she is Grace Kelly, the singer, saxophonist, songwriter, composer, and bandleader. Kelly has been described as a musical prodigy who has performed over 1,000 shows as bandleader in 35 countries. Her resume also includes being part of the house band for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and she has become the youngest member of the Board of Trustees of Berklee College of Music. This accomplished and diverse musical artist has 15 albums to her credit, with her latest release being Grace Kelly with Strings at the Movies. This is a reflection of a lifelong passion for cinema and, of course, music. The recording is deeply inspired by the seminal album Charlie Parker with Strings and features an all-star cast including Tony Award-winning and Grammy nominee producer Brian Carter, along with powerhouse arrangers Charlie Rosen and Stephen Feifke. Special guests on the record include esteemed jazz trumpeter Sean Jones and guitar sensation Corey Wong. Join me now for a fun and fascinating conversation with Grace Kelly. So where I'd like to begin is, I know that you are an amazing and diverse artist. You bring a lot to the table. You're a musician, saxophonist. You are a vocalist. You're an educator. You're a composer. You're an activist, from what I've read from some of your bio, that you get involved in a number of causes and you give back to the community, and that's great. But I'm wondering if it would be safe to say that I could also add dancer / choreographer to the list of your resume.
Well, I'm flattered, Alan. I think you can add, you could add dancer. I would kind of call myself a lightweight choreographer. It's something I would love to get better at. And actually, it's something that I started with when I was a little girl. I was actually singing, acting, and dancing from the age of 6. I look at so many superstar choreographers and I'm like, wow, I'm just beginning, you know, in that territory to be able to choreograph for my own work. So yeah, I would say for my own works, let's throw it in.
Okay. And the reason why I'm starting here at this point is I looked at your website and I happened to run across the video of you and Leo P doing a song called Fish and Chips.
Yes, that we did choreograph together. Yes.
And I want to turn our listeners on to that because they need to check it out. I have never seen such a high energy performance. And the two of you, Leo P, by the way, for those people who may not know, is otherwise known as Leonard Pellegrino. And he is a fine musician, also a great sax player as well. But then this song, Fish and Chips, it's like 5.5 minutes. When I finished watching that video, I'm exhausted.
You know, we did one take. And that was a really magical day in the studio. And what Leo and I have found when we get together and we play is we tend to hit a lot of gold and a lot of just one take energy and excitement.
We'll be right back.
And I think we are both at the heart of it, such live performers. Like the adrenaline goes, we turn on, and in a case like recording Fish and Chips, we certainly had a lot of time together to practice. We made the choreography together. We made the song together. We rehearsed it with the band. I'm so glad that you found it.
and it's great. And I again urge our listeners to check it out. Go on to your website and take a look at that video, because it's high energy. There is dance movement in there. And then at the same time, the first time I watched it, I thought, oh, they can't be playing. This has to be an overdub. You just went through the motions, but no, then I saw it again. It's like, no, wait, they're actually playing and dancing, jumping on and off of chairs.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because at this point we've amassed like hundreds of thousands of subscribers just on our YouTube channel alone. We've had a lot of like viral videos and that one as well, just really popped off, and it's just over a million plays on YouTube alone. And we actually did it just for fun. I hope folks listening will check it out.
And they will not be disappointed. I would certainly guarantee that. Anyway, from there, I would like to move on and address, if you don't mind, my characterizing it as the elephant in the room here.
Yes.
Let's talk about your name. The story of how you became Grace Kelly. You were born in Massachusetts, so yes. You're a Korean-American.
Yes.
But your name was not always Grace Kelly.
No, this is, some people assume that it's my stage name, but that's not the case either. Like you said, I was born in Wellesley, Massachusetts, and my mother and my biological father, both from Seoul in South Korea. And my mother came to this country when she was 17 years old and didn't know a word of English. And 2 years later, managed to get into Wellesley College, and a really brilliant woman. I was really lucky that when I was 2 years old, I met my stepfather. And his name is Bob Kelly, and he's always been my dad, you know, in my eyes. He's raised me, and we have a very special connection. We've traveled the world together, and early on in my career, he was also managing me. So a lot of love there. And my birth name was Grace Chung, Chung, which sounds much more Korean. truly Korean. And my family had this tradition when I was, probably from the age of like 6 years old, where on Friday nights, we would go to our family's favorite Chinese restaurant, Ming Garden in Brookline, Massachusetts. And after that, we would go to Blockbuster, if anyone remembers Blockbuster. And it was actually, I just love Friday nights, because then my family would disperse and we'd try to find a movie, you know, pick out a DVD for that night. And my dad is a big fan of some of the classic older movies, one of them being High Society with Princess Grace Kelly, you know, as lead actress. And I remember the first time seeing her in this movie and just being so blown away by her elegance, her sophistication, you know. And so I went into kindergarten the next day and I told my teachers, I'm now Princess Grace Kelly. And that wasn't my name. It was Grace Chung, right? And so I started signing my name like that. And my kindergarten teacher said, that's not your name. You can't sign your name like that. You know, but it was just kind of her imagery, her beauty was just in my consciousness. And I never would have predicted is that years later, when I was 8 years old, my stepfather was able to legally adopt me and my sister. And my last name turned into Kelly. So I actually turned into Grace Kelly legally. This was before I was performing, before I was an artist, before I was playing saxophone. Then that's how my name turned into Grace Kelly. And we actually, on this new album of mine, recorded the only song that Grace Kelly sang on screen. And it happens to be just a gorgeous Cole Porter song, True Love.
Well, I give to you and you give to me true love, true love. So on and on it will with nothing to do.
So this album is a very full circle one for me. It's very personal, and that story is really, really wild. I just would have never thought that that would happen, you know? Couldn't even like write it, but sure enough, it did.
It was kismet. It was like almost meant to happen. That
exactly.
From this love and fun time of watching movies to being influenced by music in the household, et cetera, that you became a musical artist by the name of Grace Kelly.
And Alan, it's such a trip. Myself and Grace Kelly couldn't look further apart in that department. But, you know, embracing her beauty and sophistication, I just love getting to feel the princess vibes from Grace Kelly. It's like when the picture and the audio don't match.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's the fun of it.
Exactly.
Then through your childhood, you found your way through educational circles that led to you becoming a professional musician.
Yes.
And the influence for saxophone started very early. It seems like around 10 years old or so, where Stan Getz was an influence.
Yeah, actually, even a few years before, Stan Getz is the reason why I play saxophone. And when I was, again, probably around 6, 7 years old, we had another weekly routine that would happen in our household, which on Sunday mornings, we'd have brunch. And my dad cooked great blueberry and chocolate chip pancakes. And very often, every week, The Girl from Ipanema, that song was playing. And Stan Getz's gorgeous solo on that was just like kind of part of the soundtrack of my childhood. And so I found myself just singing all of his solos. And I really, I think it was at that point, you know, at 6 or 7 years old, that I thought one day I really want to play the saxophone, because the way that I would hear Stan Getz playing it was like a human voice, you know, and it was just so touching to my spirit and so soothing and so beautiful, and felt such like this vocal quality to it. So, you know, fast forward when I finally did get to, you know, pick an instrument that I wanted to play, I knew that I wanted to play saxophone. And to this day, listening to him play the music of Jobim or his records with Astrud Gilberto, it's some of my absolute favorite music. followed
your path extremely well.
I'm lucky to have grown up in Boston, where there's just world-class musicians and faculty, you know, all around, because I was also given the opportunity to join jam sessions early on. My first saxophone teacher, James Miranda, would hold local jam sessions. And, you know, I was like 10 years old at the time, and he encouraged me to come on out. And then he let me sit in with him in the band, you know, and then I would meet some other professional musicians and they'd say, hey, come on up and play a song with us next week. We're going to be at this club and that club. And that was really like a snowball effect of getting the opportunity to go out and play and meet people. And it's something I tell my students, get on out there and play anytime you have the opportunity to meet people and put yourselves in different musical situations. And that there's so much growth and excitement and challenge that comes from those opportunities.
Well, you can't sit around and wait for the gig to come to you. It's like you said, go do a little hangout somewhere after hours and play with people and jump in on the scene. In fact, you even did that, or I don't know if it was so much whether it was a casual thing, but you were performing with Ann Hampton Calloway, who's been a guest on our podcast. Was that something where you were scheduled to be with her, or was it just happenstance?
Ann is a mentor of mine, and I have just so grateful for her artistry and for her generosity. She invited me to sit in with her at Scholars Jazz Club in Boston years ago. And previously to that, she wrote the liner notes to my very first album my album that I cut when I was 12 years old. And that just meant so much to me because I look up to her so much. And my sister and I had actually sang duets that her and Liz had recorded. And so previously to her hearing my music that I was making when I was really young, I had seen her live in Boston. And I think she was kind of taken with the fact that there was like this really young girl. I think my sister and I were both there with my parents, and she kind of came up to me and she gave the two of us a diva blessing, you know, and then we just started to talk with her. And she was so kind to say, "Hey, I'd love to hear your album," because she knew I was working on one, and here's some diva blessings for you to take into the studio. So she wrote my liner notes for the first album, and then she invited me to perform a song with her at Sculler's. And that led into an incredible moment of Fred Taylor, who is, you know, a legendary producer in the jazz world and has, you know, given everyone from Norah Jones to Esperanza Spalding, you know, early opportunities in Boston to grace the stage. That's the night that Fred heard me live at Sculler's, and he came up to me after that and he said, "We got to get you in with your own band here at Sculler's." And growing up in Boston, like, Sculler's Jazz Club was the spot, you know, and I've sat in with so many people at that venue, actually, thanks to Fred for making those opportunities happen. And he believed in me so much. And he was the reason why I was able to play at some major festivals and just meet so many people. So again, just Boston and the folks there who really took notice of what I was doing and gave me opportunities and helped me. I'm just so grateful for all of that, because I certainly wouldn't be where I, you know, where I am today in my career without those folks.
And you have indeed traveled the world. You've been all over. You've done some 1,000 performances here and there on different stages, internationally, not just here in the States at club venues, but everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild, Alan. I think now I don't know the exact number, but it's absolutely over 1,000 concerts that I've performed as a band leader, in over 30 countries. And I started performing and recording professionally when I was 12 years old. So I've been at it for a second, and it's still the greatest gift to get to perform for people live all around the world and hear how the music touches them. And my band's played everywhere from, you know, the Hollywood Bowl at the Playboy Jazz Festival to the Newport Jazz Festival multiple times. A couple of those times being with my saxophone heroes and mentors. We did a set with Phil Woods. We did a set with Lee Konitz, and festivals, yeah, and clubs all around the world. It's I never would have thought, you know, if I was talking to my younger self, that I would get to travel and see the world and play my music. It's really, it's very special.
It's like, who knew?
Right.
Back when this little girl was enthralled with Grace Kelly and music from the movies, and then you end up being an artist who performs and records music from the movies.
I know, you know, and this project, this new record, is one that I've been wanting to do for a while. I had it in the back of my head, you know, and I've done a lot of other recordings since my first one when I was 12. But I remember kind of putting this one in the backseat, and to get to finally do it, and also to do this project with this instrumentation, which features just an incredible string section, is also very musically and artistically special to me, because one of my favorite jazz records growing up was Charlie Parker with strings. And one of those songs, Just Friends, is one I listen to every night before going to bed. And, you know, I studied a lot of Charlie Parker. I had the Omni book and was working on like confirmation for 6 months with my teacher. So, you know, as a alto saxophone player, he's a hero of mine. And to now have that a similar soundscape, and even one of the songs that we recorded, The Way You Look Tonight, we used Charlie Parker's arrangement, Just Friends, as inspiration for that track. Thank you. There's a dream team that's on this album. And I'm glad to finally make this full circle moment of my love for movies finally come to fruition, because it's something I've been wanting to do for a while.
And I love the title of it. It's Grace Kelly with Strings.
Yes, at the movies. That's right. Well, I hope to bring, you know, when listeners are listening to the album, I hope that they feel all of the memories, all of the, if they've seen any of these movies, which we covered some very well-known and very loved songs from movies, the emotional pull that's there, right? When we think about some of our favorite movies, is different for everyone, but I think it's a deep-seated emotional place. And when people hear the music, and I've noticed this when we play this program live, they're kind of transported back to that time in their life where maybe they saw the movie or whatever the memories were that were embedded with that. And it's very cool to get to be in the performer seat of that, helping to transport them back to that memory.
So was this all of your choice as to the movies that you were paying tribute to in this album?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was actually one of the hardest parts of the process, was figuring out what songs we'd record. But that was step one, you know, it was myself like figuring out, okay, what are some of my favorite songs from cinema and some of those favorite scenes, you know, Back to the Future is one. I love that movie so much. So it's like, okay, well, Power of Love's got to be on it. And I had the pleasure of joining Huey Lewis on stage a couple of times. And Huey's a friend and a big inspiration to me. So I'm like, okay, that's got to make it on. And so all the songs that I picked, I do have very much a personal connection with, because the way that I like to pick songs that I cover is very much driven from an emotional connection that I feel with that song. Of course, singing True Love, you know, and knowing that story of how much Princess Grace Kelly means to me, it felt natural to pick that. But gosh, there's just so many great songs from movies. And that's something that when I perform this program live for fans, they're like, oh, you didn't do this one and you didn't do that one. And what about, you know? So I was like, well, we got to leave room for part two, part three. And this could be an ongoing, this could be, gosh, like 20 records. The other thing that I had kept in mind was, what songs are going to sound good being what I call gracified? The lead voice of having a saxophone changes a lot, you know, and then having strings. And so we really wanted to approach this musically with, okay, how can we create a fresh arrangement? We don't want to record these songs in the same way, you know? And so we had 8 different, just brilliant arrangers, young arrangers, some of whom have won Tonys and Grammy Awards and really just up and coming, and tried to give this a fresh spin. And so we covered, for example, the James Bond theme song, but then made it a medley and put Billie Eilish's No Time to Die as part of that track as well, because I always want to bring forth the classics and the tradition, you know, and songs that we all know and love, and then the new stuff. And I'm a big fan of Billie Eilish, and I really like that song, No Time to Die. And so then when I was talking to my producer and the arranger of that track, Brian Carter, being like, hey, what about putting them together, you know? And then that just opens up a whole new window of opportunity on the arrangement side. Okay, now what are we going to do with this?
Right. And it's not only you playing saxophone, but you also sing the Billie Eilish portion of No Time to Die.
I love being able to present my music and the music of others with these different avenues of expression, right? Because I think of playing music as just expression. So the saxophone has a certain sound, a personality. And then being able to sing lyrics and use my voice has a different way of connecting. You are never wrong. cool thing about doing an album is that I'm able to do them both at the same time. Like on that track, you hear my saxophone weaving in and out in certain moments when I'm singing. Live, unfortunately, I can't do it like that. But I do love being able to do that in a recording setting because it just brings up so many more ideas of what I can do with different colors and with my different voices.
Some other selections on the album I'd like to run through with you because I took a trip this weekend and it was a 2-hour drive each way and I played your album 4 hours.
Did you really? No, oh my gosh. Wow.
Just because I liked it and I knew I was going to be speaking with you today. So I thought, well, if I'm going to talk about the music, I've got to at least hear it.
Right.
And listen to it from a number of different angles. But I was not only intrigued and pleasantly rewarded with the fact that you chose to do part of this with strings, but you also added some special guests on the album who are also artists that performed, two of which I absolutely love, one of which was the Soul Bossa Nova.
Yes.
And that was with trumpeter Sean Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought I was going to wear the CD out because I love the fact that I ended up terming that particular track as Horn of Plenty.
<It's> pretty good.
The two of you are just killing it. I mean, it was just amazing the way both of you played on that.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you know, Sean Jones is just what an incredible, incredible artist and person, you know. And he came in and he did that in one take and he played that cadenza in one take. Can you imagine that? I mean, our jaws were on the ground. But that is the musician that he is, and it is really fun to get to have him on this track. I've been a fan of his for a long time now, and he brings so much, of course, musicianship. But I remember when I first saw Sean live, this spiritual connection that he brings to his playing, I feel it on like a different level. You know, I remember walking away from his performance being like, wow, I feel like I'm like in a different planet right now. My heart was just so full of love and so lifted. And it's not surprising when you meet him because he's that type of person. And so it comes out in his music. But I've been wanting to do something with him for a while. And so I was really excited when he was down to be on this, featured on this track. And boy, he was in and out of the studio in less than an hour. It's really cool to get to play this great Quincy Jones song, which is such a bop. It's one of my favorite tracks on the album.
Yeah, you guys, both of you just took it to another level. And it was amazing. Speaking of amazing, one of my favorite guitarists is on your album as well.
Corey Wong, yes.
He was just really wonderful on this particular track. Tell us about that one.
Corey is a force of nature. I have had the pleasure of getting to play a bunch of music with him. And so, you know, when I was working on this album, I was thinking as we were recording Power of Love, I'm like, gosh, I feel like I could just hear Corey like ripping on this. Mm-hmm. And so then I approached him to see if he'd be interested and just so excited, you know, that he was down to jump on this. We'll be right back. of course, brought his incredible chops playing it. And then he also tracked his, like, you know, his famous rhythm guitar groove. And you could hear that all through the track. And Corey just has such incredible ears, not only as a player, but as a producer. And so when he created his parts, like, you could just tell, even at, like, the end of the track, he had some really lyrical lines that kind of, some longer lines that would repeat. And so when he sent me the session file back, it was like, just like, felt like Christmas, because there were so many cool elements of not only his lead part of, like, but his rhythm playing as well. And like I mentioned earlier, this is a very special song to me because Huey Lewis is a friend. It's wild to say, you know, I've gotten to share the stage with Huey Lewis, and he's been a real supporter of mine. And to get to do this song and to also have Huey in mind, you know, and then get Corey in on it, it's just a whole lot of fun. This is usually the song we end the set with when we play it live, because it's just, you know, when you think Power of Love and you think Back to the Future, it's just like, it's fun and just ready to rock and roll.
And then on the album, you have an element of quiet beauty with Tamir Handelman,
mm-hmm.
an amazing pianist.
He really is.
And the song Moon River is, it's a lovely song anyway.
But. Yes.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way to dream.
Well, you know, when Tamir sits down at the piano, it's just like unbelievable. His touch on the piano when he's playing something as beautiful as like Moon River is absolutely stunning. And then he's, you know, you give him a 250 BPM song and he's just ripping, you know. And I've been a fan of his. I remember first seeing him playing in Jeff Hamilton's trio. I met Tamir when I was like a young teenager at the Lionel Hampton Jazz Festival. And when I was thinking of people for this album, Tamir was top of mind. We had also just performed and taught together at the Centrum Jazz Festival like a few weeks before I was working on going to the studio for this project. And so, yeah, called Tamir up and he was very into it.
You bring the meat to the table for the Mission Impossible theme. You drag out the big baritone.
Yes, that was really fun. I mean, this song, I wanted to play a song on the baritone sax, because on the album I'm playing, you know, alto saxophone, soprano sax, Barry singing. So I wanted to showcase the multi-instrumentalist angle. And baritone sax is, I mean, it's probably my favorite saxophone, not my favorite saxophone to carry, but my favorite saxophone to play. And what I mean by that is it's just so powerful and it's so fun to play the low notes on the baritone sax. But as far as just getting to really have that power and have that low end and to play that bass line of Mission Impossible, it's like perfect for the baritone.
I mean, there's so many wonderful songs on this album at the movies, and it's just a delight to listen to from top to bottom. You also have Disney medley in here. You've got stuff from Pirates of the Caribbean and all kinds of wonderful movies. Pinocchio.
Yes.
It's a delight. It's absolutely a delight. And I'm sure this album is one that you're quite proud of in terms of putting this out finally.
Well, thank you. So happy to hear that you found it delightful. I'm very, very excited to have this album out and very proud of it. It's just, I feel like the quality and all of the elements that we put together for this are just top notch. I'm so grateful to our producer, Brian Carter, who is an incredible artist, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and recent Grammy Award winner for his work in the Broadway musical Some Like It Hot, and also recent Tony Award winner. And Brian has one of those brains and hearts and knowledge that is just like mind-blowing.
So having said all of that, what are you going to do, Miss, to top this one?
You know, it's a real good question. And knowing me, it's going to be something very different. That's all I'll say for now. It's, you know, I'm always working on creative projects and I got a lot of things brewing and I got a lot of ideas, but I always like to switch it up. You know, and so I have a feeling that the next album is going to be something very different. And so the folks who are in love with this music, and people have been asking me for a while, oh, when are you going to make another jazz record? And because I do a lot of different experimentation and different music I play. And so finally, I'm like, all right, here it is, you know, and I hope you enjoy it. Because the next thing is going to be pretty different. And I think that's the exciting thing about being an artist. And the necessity of needing to keep innovating, to keep learning, to keep feeding oneself with new inspiration so that the music is always something new.
Well, as I offer all of my guests on this podcast, I'd like to invite you to take a moment and tell our listeners how they can learn more about you and your music. And also see that video that I talked about earlier.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. Folks can find out all about me, more than I even know, on my website, gracekellymusic.com. Don't forget the music. Otherwise, you'll go to a Princess Grace Kelly's website, which, you know, if you want to check that out too, I'm sure that's, you know, just settle into some beautiful photos of Grace Kelly. But gracekellymusic.com, and I'm also very active on my socials. My Instagram is @gkellymusic. My Facebook page, Grace Kelly Music. My YouTube page, again, under Grace Kelly Music. That is also the place that folks can see that fish and chips video and see a bunch of my past work. So yeah, very active on the socials, and I always love hearing from folks. So feel free to drop a comment. And then as far as getting like an autographed album, those merchandise items are available on my store. And that also has all of my upcoming tour dates.
I will say, Grace Kelly, this has been an absolutely delightful conversation. And I would like to thank you for being our guest on All That's Jazz.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I feel the same way, and I appreciate all of your words and getting to spend this time with your listeners. So thank you to everyone who's been listening, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of All That's Jazz with singer, saxophonist, songwriter, composer, and bandleader Grace Kelly.
We'd like to thank Ben Sidran for the use of Mr. P's Shuffle as our theme song.
And visit us again next time for another interesting conversation on All That's Jazz.
If you like today's episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on the streaming service you use. All That's Jazz is available on every major streaming app, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, and Spotify, as well as Facebook and online at allthatsjazz.net.